is characterized, I think, by leaders who care a lot more about getting the job done than worrying about rank or privilege. And that is what was best for the state troopers, these wonderful young people who get in these cars every day and go out and protect us.
Welcome to the first edition of the FBI National Academy Associates Leadership APB podcast series. My name is John Kennedy, and I'm the Director of Education and Training for the FBI National Academy Associates. I'll be your moderator today. These are very difficult and far from normal times. We hope that you, your families, your staffs, and your communities are safe and well. The Leadership APB podcast series will engage law enforcement and public safety executives in discussions on timely and current topics affecting first responders around the world. These leaders will share with you their leadership and managerial philosophies and successes and obstacles they have encountered in their careers. The podcast series are free audio programs distributed to FBI National Academy Associates members, their staffs, and other law enforcement executives that provide our communities, states, countries, and the profession with the highest degree of law enforcement professionalism and expertise. It's a pleasure to introduce and have with us today George P. Beach, Assistant Director of the FBI's Office of Partner Engagement. A.D. Beach, thanks for being with us today. Can you tell us a little bit about your background?
Sure, John. So listen, first thing is I want to thank the FBI National Academy of Associates for inviting me to do this inaugural podcast. I have been the Assistant Director of the Office of Partner Engagement at the FBI only since January. And prior to that, I had a 36-year career with the New York State Police, and I retired as the superintendent in 2019. And I always add to this that, so people know, the New York State Police is a full-service agency of about 6,000 members and civilians who provide basic police services all across the state. I have found OPE is staffed by really terrific people who work hard and are very committed to the mission of outreach. And I would say to say that I'm fortunate to have this job with OPE would be an understatement, because in my case, I've had a chance to work for what I think are two of the greatest police agencies in the world. So again, thanks for having me on this morning.
Well, thank you. I did notice when I was doing a little research on you and checking out your bio, I noticed that you started as a firefighter in New Jersey. Why did you choose to change and go into law enforcement?
Well, I did 5 years with the fire department, and in the interim, I had taken the test for trooper in New York. And to be honest, I distinctly remember the day I took the test, they announced that there had been 38,000 people statewide who took the test. So I thought, well, you know, my chance of ever getting that job would be pretty slim. So I went home and forgot about it. And 3 years later, which I now understand is probably near the end of the eligibility list, I had a phone call from an investigator who said, you know, you're probably not interested. And I thought quickly at the time, you know what, I am interested. I love firefighting. I spent many years afterwards as a volunteer, but I thought this is a serious challenge and a chance to make a difference, a real difference. So I took the chance, resigned from the fire department, and entered the State Police Academy.
So as you moved up the ranks at the New York State Police, who were some of your role models and why?
Well, yeah, I have to tell you, over the years, I was very, very fortunate in almost every job I have to work for terrific people, terrific leaders. But right from the beginning, I was very fortunate as a young trooper to have two sergeants, Frank Krasinski and Jack Hayes. They were both great supervisors. And I think they were great because they were able to strike that, what I consider a critical balance between, you know, getting the work done, getting the mission done, but caring very deeply about and for their troopers. And so when the time came, I wanted to be a sergeant and I wanted to be just like them. So, and I learned from them many things that I took with me along the way. And then when I eventually was able to test for and gain commissioned rank as a lieutenant and a captain, I looked up to a man who was still a very close friend of mine, Greg Sittler. He was a Vietnam-era combat vet, and in a classic sense, he was tough but fair. But on any number of occasions, I saw him stick his neck out for his troopers, oftentimes with little regard for his own well-being or his own career. So I never forgot the lessons that they taught me on the way up. But the basic was is that they cared very deeply about their troopers and wanted to see them succeed.
You've led a very large organization with the New York State Police and a very complex organization. Can you tell our audience a little bit about your management and leadership style and philosophy?
Sure. But let me preface by saying that this isn't something that I ever actually studied or thought about or intentionally tried to have a given style. So what I did is in a look back, read about what are the major recognized management styles to see did I fit in any of those. And again, this isn't something that I thought about. I learned those lessons from those mentors and just went ahead and did it. But in a look back, I would say that probably my management style is a closest fit between two recognized styles. The first is, of course, very popular, and that's a servant leader, which is characterized, I think, by leaders who care a lot more about getting the job done than worrying about rank or privilege. So, you know, when it came time for me to lead, I made sure also that my executive team always made their decisions with that in mind. And that is what was best for the state troopers, these wonderful young people who get in these cars every day and go out and protect us. So it was important that the decisions that they made and that I made was in their best interest. And second, in looking at this, I would say I had a good dose of what they refer to as a democratic style. And the primary reason for that is I valued collaboration in all the efforts. One of the things that I did in hierarchical organizations and in paramilitary organizations like the state police, it is often the case that middle managers, and particularly our non-commissioned officers, over time could become afraid to make decisions. You know, and there's a couple of reasons for that. Number one, things are always changing in the police business. You know, from minute to minute, we deal with nothing, principally bad things all day long. We have to sometimes make quick decisions, not life and death, but quick decisions that can affect what's going to happen either at a scene, at a station, in a troop. And so I wanted to empower them and to make them understand that I wanted them to make decisions out there. And so I did everything I could to empower them to do that. My theory was, listen, some decision is better than no decision. The worst thing to do is no decision, because then whatever's happening at that time is just going to continue to happen without our intervention. While I'm at it, I just wanted to point out to you that, you know, I understood, I think, and carried with me all the way through my ranks up to superintendent, the sacrifice that our people were making. And that colored a lot of the decisions that I made and how I felt about things too. So I just wanted to mention, because it's something that stays with me every single day, that during my time, my 36 years with the troopers, I attended 41 line of duty deaths. And as the superintendent, I buried 8 state troopers, 5 of whom died violent deaths. So I understood very, very clearly the sacrifice, and I valued it. And that's why I managed, I believe, in part, the way that I did.
Well, it's obvious that you led by example. So congratulations for your service at the, you know, State Police in New York. But now you've transitioned over to the Office of Partner Engagement. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about OPE, the programs and the resources that exist that can connect the local law enforcement community to the FBI?
Sure. So the first thing I would tell you is that the Office of Partner Engagement in the organizational hierarchy of the FBI is housed in the intelligence branch of the Bureau. And to that end, we are considered a part of the intelligence branch, and I'll explain a little bit further as I go along. But our mission is primarily twofold. First, we're the voice of the FBI out to other federal, state, local, tribal, and territorial police partners. As everybody knows, without the help and cooperation of our partners out there, the mission of the FBI simply couldn't get done. It's vital that we maintain these relationships with our partners in the law enforcement community for very, very, very important reasons. And beyond that, it is part of the pillar, the pillars that the director has put out for his main management philosophy. The fourth is maintaining these critical relationships. So we get to be the voice of the FBI out to our partners. How we do that is we provide through OP a wide range of support services. We typically, in our annual efforts, will attend 40 to 45 conferences with major police associations. We supply subject matter experts, training, research, intelligence, among many other things. And while OP is not the subject matter experts, we do know where to go in the Bureau to get those resources when it's been requested. The second part, and this is the part that I found equally as important, is that we are expected to be the voice of our partners back to the director and his executive staff. And that's critical so that they understand and they know what challenges are being faced out there by our law enforcement partners. The FBI is arguably the biggest and most important police organization in the country, with vast resources and brilliant people who work there. But we need to know how to use those resources and where to direct those resources and monies that we will spend and policies that are being shaped by his executive staff, and what the effect will be on our partners out there. So we get a chance to spend a lot of time talking to our partners and conveying those messages back in. Just quickly, I'll tell you that we have three units. Strategic engagement, that does our outreach, as I've mentioned. Enhanced engagement, that handles our Fusion Center program, plus a wide array of intelligence, training, cooperative programs, including eGuardian and NTOC, in cooperation with CJIS, Criminal Justice Information Services. And then lastly, I have a violence reduction unit that researches violent behavior, like active shooters, and provides training and intelligence to our partners. So when I interviewed for this job with the director, the AD who had held this job prior to me, Terry Sleeper, had really taken this thing from its beginnings with help from some other people and really moved it into a premier division. And the director said to me, "Kerry has done a fabulous job. I want you to figure out how to take this to a higher level." So that's what we're trying to do.
Now, these are obvious really trying times for everybody, especially as we try to do our outreach. What challenges has COVID-19 created in the Office of Partner Engagement, and how have you overcome these challenges to continue your mission?
Well, just like everybody else, the first and most obvious effect has been on our own workforce. And that's because we're physically distant from each other now, in keeping with the necessity to telework. With the exception of a few of our management people in the unit, everybody's working from home. So the immediate effect in the office, these people, many of whom have worked for many, many years together, their collaborative efforts, we're getting the job done. There's no doubt about that. But that's the first and most immediate effect, that they're distant from each other. And I'm distant from them now, and as are the other management people in the unit. So it makes the ability to look at and to talk to people and to interact with them so much more difficult. But that's across the Bureau. That's across the Bureau and obviously in industry and nationwide, that's what's happening. So we're all hoping that in time we can reconstitute the workforce and everybody gets back together. The other principal effect COVID-19's had on our unit is, you know, we're out every day in the police community, literally shaking hands and building relationships, and we can't do that now. So we have had to think of new ways. My folks have had to think of new ways to keep those contacts going, to develop new ones. And of course, we're doing what everybody else is, which is everything is being done to the extent that it can be virtually now. So we have had to pivot and become very, very good at doing things virtually. So the work is being done. It's just not the same. And we all look forward to the ability to do face-to-face meetings with our counterparts again.
So, A.D. Beach, I got a couple more questions for you. You're a graduate of the FBI National Academy Session 174. How is your attendance at the Academy help advance your career? And then also, can you give us a couple examples of how the networking with other NA grads has helped you in dealing with and solving complex issues?
Sure. So, first off, can you imagine the 174th session? I mean, that's, you know, I mean, if that doesn't age me, I think I was on a Zoom call or a Skype business call, and I saw, I can't remember who now, but another police executive and his yellow brick, which we all proudly display after completing the PT, the last PT part in the Attic Academy. I think I want to say it was way up in the 200s. So if anybody needed to kind of date me a little bit, that's that should tell you right there, the 174 kid getting a little old. So I found over the years that to me in my career, I had two great opportunities that the state police provided. The first was to attend the National Academy. The second is they gave me the chance to get a master's degree in criminal justice administration. I will tell you, between those two, for me, the National Academy experience was the best. It is literally, to me, the most formative and development program for young executives who are potentially going to rise through the ranks. The program is expertly geared towards developing those skills and making young executives aware of important things as they come up through the ranks. So as a practical matter, attendance at the National Academy for the New York State Police put me in a very small group of leaders inside the agency who had been selected by the superintendent for potential advancement later on. So for us, attendance at the Academy is we had one per session. So we would send, I think, you know, on an average year, maybe we would be lucky and get maybe two or three at the most on a good year. So you became part of a select group. So he reposed that trust in you to send you out there to do those things. And so that kind of helped immediately in advancing the career. And then I can tell you that, and I just have to mention, the very best example of networking at the Academy, I became very close friends with, at the time, he was a senior non-commissioned officer from the Air Force Security Forces. Remains to this day, probably one of my closest friends. He eventually left the Air Force, took the test, became a New York State Trooper, and followed me up through the ranks. And so on a daily basis, I was able to seek his advice, his guidance, and we had that common beginning together, which made that possible. And then lastly, I have to tell you, over the years, I've lost track of the amount of times that I've picked the phone up and actually called somebody, one of my classmates, because what I found is, and I tried to impress this upon my executive staff, that when we needed to stop trying to reinvent the wheel every single time. And more often than not, when we called out, we found out to these other executives that they had not only dealt with some who was a problem, but had come up with new and innovative ways to deal with it that gave us a head start. So there was a real world application to this, the networking and being around such talented people and then watching them accelerate up through the ranks and deal with these complex issues. So it's been a tremendous benefit, one that I'll always be grateful for.
A.D. Beach, it's been an honor to be able to talk to you today. Again, thank you for taking the time to share your leadership and managerial philosophy, as well as the priorities of the FBI's Office of Partner Engagement with our listeners. This concludes our broadcast. Thanks for joining us, and be sure to catch our next podcast on August 5th. Our podcast calendar can be found at www.fbina.org. Please stay safe and well.